The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
Hello, hello. This intro, I'm back in the home studio just a couple days after I interviewed the one and only Cousin Deke. And this is episode 61 of The Producers Podcast, found at ryanontheradio.com. If you'd like to tweet me, you can Twitter me or twatter me at rdrean, R-D-R-E-A-N, Facebook, the podcast page. It's also kind of my blog page also. I post anything of audio or voiceover relevance there. It's facebook.com/prodpod, P-R-O-D-P-O-D, if you want to go there. There is a Google Plus page. I think I might have a sum total of 30 people paying attention to that, so hasn't exploded over there yet. Anyway, just a couple quick notes here before we dive in. Let's see here, what should I start with? One part. I'm doing one part pretty much from here on out because I've had multiple people email me and tweet me saying, hey man, you know, it's a little more convenient and I think we'd love the one part episodes like I did with John Carter. So that's what I'll do from here on out, unless I start getting an influx of people telling me that that's dumb and I should break it up into two or three parts. I just think today, you know, with the bandwidth and the devices we use to listen to our stuff, we don't really need to break it down like that. I don't think. What the hell do I really know, though? So that's what this is. One long part. It was a great interview with Deke. I had a lot of fun and very excited that I was in the same room as the person I was interviewing. Ironically, I think I've mentioned this before, so I'm recycling material, but the only people I've interviewed live have either been from New York City, where I don't live, or the UK. Granted, the people from the two Brits came to me, Chris UK Stevens, who was, I think, like episode 4 or something, still a good buddy of mine. And then the great Dave Bethel, who was in town visiting, and I said, sit there, pal, we're doing an interview. And my good buddy Dom Nero out there at Hot 97 in New York. I was visiting New York City. So anyway, this time I stayed locally and interviewed locally. The first time in 61 episodes. So you can't call me a homer for one thing. And also Deke was well worth it. I went and saw the brand newly remodeled Clear Channel facilities in Dallas. And they are very, very nice. And they're basically in a building by themselves now. Because I think like 12 of the 14 floors of people recently moved out of that building, which probably isn't great for the building owner, but pretty cool for the Clear Channel folks. So anyway, it was a lot of fun. Thanks to Deke for having me over there into his little studio, his little cave of creativity over there. And, you know, anything else I have to mention, I'll wrap it up at the end of this. First, we'll start with just a little sampling of Cousin Deke's audio. Because there's a lot of interview to get to. I put all of his demos on a show notes page. The show notes are really just to hear the long form demo audio from Deke. So if you want to go hear all of this stuff in its entirety, you can go over there. Otherwise, sit back, relax. Here comes Cousin Deke.
Vegas, 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 Vegas.
The iHeartRadio Music Festival.
iHeartRadio Music Festival.
Where the music of the iHeartRadio app comes to life.
Happens.
Y'all, stand up. Welcome, my friend, Prince.
This year, we rewrite music history.
All right, this is a big one for me because I had to not make a phone call or connect an ISDN line. I had to drive 16 minutes.
How long did it?
About 16 minutes.
Got not bad.
Cousin Deke, and we're live in the Deke Fortress here, Clear Channel Facilities in
the
Dallas,
smallest
Texas.
Smallest production studio in the building.
Is this really the smallest? Mm-hmm.
I was the last one. When I was hired here, I told you earlier, this is my 10-year anniversary here.
Yeah, congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you. And but when I got here, it was right when they'd consolidated all the Dallas stations into this building. And I was hired by The Edge, and The Edge was the last station to come over. So all the big rooms, like if you go to any of the other production rooms, they're at least three times the size.
And
of
everybody had made their stake, their claim.
Mm-hmm.
And
but
so
now they're all gone. I'm the only guy left. And every time, you know, one would get let go, they would say, hey, you know, why don't you move into the bigger room? But I've probably, like a lot of guys, paranoid. I'm like, no, this is, if I move, you'll fire me.
I was going to say that this is working. Mm-hmm. If I change something, just like an athlete or something.
Yep. It took me until these walls were just this gray carpet until December. This past December, I hung all this stuff up because I thought, well, all right, I can have something.
Yeah.
Because I figured the second I put something on the wall, I'm out.
This, just so everyone knows, you got, let's see here, you must be a Grateful Dead fan.
Yeah, there's Grateful Dead tapestries.
I see. What do you call it? What do you specific? I mean, these are the bears. What is, mm-hmm. is there an official name?
Just
Grateful
the bears.
Dead Bears? Okay.
Just the bears.
Yeah, so anyway, you got this. I mean, I actually, when I walked in here and you said you'd been in here for 10 years, I thought, yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah, I just put this up in December. My mom gave me all these tapestries for Christmas.
Well, that's great, man. Well, so for anyone who is unaware, very few will be unaware, but Cousin Deke is the guest. Cousin Deke has been a fixture at Clear Channel Dallas, Texas for, as he said, a decade. We'll get a little more into your background here in a little bit to find mm-hmm. out what the hell you're even doing in this crazy business. But you're also heard in, I mean, damn near every state at this point. Many formats, country, talk.
Country's the big one.
Country's your big format?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we can talk about this right away. You were talking about this bull personality. You sort of created, you're not really the voice of a, you know, you're like a personality of the station.
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Country, I've found that country is by far the most, like with rock, there's pretty much, you know, a reed that's not standard, but yeah. There's a rock reed. Country, though, it ranges from crazy drunken redneck on the back of a pickup truck to light AC.
Did this start with Atlanta, or did you get into the bull realm and other places first?
No, I think Atlanta was my first bull.
Yeah.
I actually started in Atlanta as the morning guy.
So
from here.
Wait, you were doing mornings in Atlanta, yeah. But based here.
Yeah, when they left for like, I don't know, it's 7 weeks.
At the Bull?
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
And then I think I'd never done country radio. I didn't know, and I told them, like, I don't know the, but it was basically just a stall. They weren't ready. They had to launch a station. They didn't have somebody, so. But yeah, that was a weird experience.
So
miss that.
Did you find that you were getting really, how much did you like the music? I'm not going to say you knew the artists or,
what, the country?
Yeah.
But I don't say I hate it, but I don't.
You're not a country guy.
I am, like, if it's real, like, I love Dwight Yoakam. I like old Randy Travis.
Yeah.
You know, I love Uncle Tupelo and Wilco, I love all that, but, you know, that doesn't get anything. But, you know, country is fun, at least from a voiceover perspective, for the most part. There's some that aren't. You know, those, like I was saying, there's some that are, they image them like a light AC.
Well, and there's a lot of country stations that still think it's 1986.
Right.
So
And some are still really paranoid about offending the audience and all that. But for the most part, it's fun.
So I was going to say, in that time when you were actually doing mornings, and I mean, did you get to interact with the audience a lot?
Oh, no, I'd voice track it.
Just track it.
Yeah, I would voice track it the night before, but it was a nightmare.
So it didn't necessarily make you a huge country fan by virtue of that.
No.
That gig. Okay.
I still didn't hear that. You know, I never. And I think I stopped voice track. I only voice track one station now, WEBN in Cincinnati. And that's just sporadic. I'm like the swing guy when they need me.
Why is that? Why aren't you doing more? Or
no, because it got to the point where I was doing nine. That was the peak. I was doing 9 7 to midnight shifts, all on different stations.
So, since we're kind of getting there now, is that where you started your radio career, in Lexington?
Yeah, I started in Lexington at Oldies 103.
All right.
Because I was drunk at a bowling alley and met a guy. He wasn't obnoxious, but I remember telling him, like, I could do, he was on the air there. And I'm like, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just graduated from college. I had a degree in philosophy and religion. And I was in a minor in sculpture. And I said, I can do that. He's like, well, why don't you come up and try? And the next day, his buddy of mine called, and he said, hey, you should go up there. And I was like, I know I'm not going up there. It's stupid. And
things said when drunk.
Yeah. And he's like, no, I'll go up there. It'll be fine. Just mess with them. I'm like, all right. So, I didn't have a job, obviously, as a philosopher. So I went up there and ended up getting hired to do overnights, midnight to 6. And then on Saturday, it was midnight to 10. I'd sit there and push the buttons
on the religious shows.
No, it wasn't a religious show. It wasn't the Reeling in the Ears one. It was one of those syndicated, oldie shows. And So that lasted like 3 or 4 months, and then they called everybody in. It was owned by Village Communications. So they sold to J-Corps, and they called everybody in and fired everybody.
Really?
And it was terrible because they were all these old people, and they were crying, and they were upset. And I was like, all right, it's fun. Bye. And I,
you're like, what, 23 or something?
Yeah, 22, 23.
22. And you're like, whatever.
Bye, everybody. And drove home, sitting there, and the phone rings, and it's the operations manager, the J-Corps guy, and he's like, hey, we need you to come back. You're not fired. I was like, oh, okay. Again, still didn't.
Whatever.
Yeah, all right. So I went back and they were flipping it to modern rock because J.Co. already owned the Heritage Classic Rock. And they, you know, that was 96. So that's when that whole alternative was coming on.
And rock was huge. I mean.
Yeah. So they, I went from doing overnights to afternoon drive on the alternative station. And then they ended up moving me to the big mainstream rock station doing 7 to midnight. And then that's how I ended up at EBN in Cincinnati. And I was at EBN for a long time.
How long were you at? How long were you there?
3 or 4 years, which is a long time to be at EBN at that time. Because while I was there, I had, I don't think I can name all the program directors, but Brad Harden.
It was one of those deals.
Yeah. I mean, well, it was all those guys that went on to be VPs in J-Corps. That was like their last stop before that.
So Cincinnati was a big jump-off market?
Yeah.
I mean, because Dallas is kind of a jump-off market for talent.
Cincinnati was, I mean, that was my dream. Like, I didn't, when I got to Cincinnati, I didn't want to ever leave. I mean, that, working at EBM was my dream job. And I'll tell you how I got there, because it's kind of a funny story. Mark Chase was our vice president, and I was music director at Double Q in Lexington. And when Mark would come to make visits to the market, he would use, like, the PD had this nice office, and they didn't have anywhere for me, so they just stuck me on a little tiny, like a school desk, literally like a school desk with Selector on it and then a phone. And so I would sit over there and do the music crap, and Chase would take over the big desk while I was there. And I was taking music calls one day, and I don't remember the guy's name. It was an independent, and I was just still, I was frustrated, you know, and dealing with, because you deal with the record people. And I was like, look, dude, you can't, you're a smart guy, I like you. You're lying. This is a piece of shit. Why are you wasting my time talking to me about how this song's great and I can't hear that? It sucks. It's awful. And he got off the phone with me, and then Chase goes, hey, you're not music director anymore. And boom, I was, he wasn't joking. I was no longer music director. And then he said, have you ever done Imogen? And I was like, no,
I've effectively
never.
Fired at that moment?
No, I was still a 7 to midnight guy.
No, but I mean, he was kind of saying, hey, I just heard that and now
yeah, you're... he's like, well, okay. He wasn't firing me from the staff. He was just like, you're not music director. And he wasn't kidding, like, that was it.
Right, that ain't for you.
And but he said, have you ever done Imogen?
Imogen. And I said, Imogen, yeah.
I said, no. And he goes, well, why don't you start that? So that's what I did. Like, the next day I came in, and instead of doing music calls and crap, I went to the production studio, and somebody gave me, it was John Wells, a voiceover file.
So you get to Cincinnati, and so you're...
Well, so I did okay with the Imogen in Lexington, and there was the opening in Cincinnati, and Eric Chase had left. He'd been there, and then he'd been gone for a little while to Tampa, and Joel Moss was there at the time. And so when the 7 to midnight thing was coming open, they said, hey, this guy, he's doing well for us in Lexington. He does imaging. He can work with Joel. And so that's how I ended up in Cincinnati, to work really closely with Joel for, you know, the whole time I was there.
So nights and then sort of an assistant.
I would get there around 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And do stuff. And then, you know, it was all Joel's. But, like, Joel and I got to be friends, but, like, the first year... He wasn't mean to me, but he didn't know me, and he didn't, you know, he was very uncomfortable, the same way I would be now, with anything that I was doing to go on the air. So I would have to, it had to be really good. I'd have to really work on it. And I would bring stuff down, because my studio was on the 5th floor of that building, and his was on the 4th, or however many floors. So he was the floor below me, and I would bring stuff down and play it for him, and he would lean back, he had this big chair, and he'd lean back and go, that's good. You know, bring it to me when it's done.
Huh?
I'd be like, oh. You know, but I'd be like, oh my god,
you're
and
like,
it's done. You know,
yeah, when it's done.
Yeah, and he didn't do it. Like at first, I'm like, well, screw you in my brain, but that's just how he was. And he wasn't even being passive aggressive. Just with his brain and how it worked, it wasn't done.
It was done or it was done. It was not done.
Yeah. So I'd go back up and figure out, what the hell can I do with this? And it was minutia, because it'd be like a 9-second sweeper. Uh-huh. So it's not like big promos or anything. I wasn't allowed to do those. I learned a lot, from doing things with him. Late 2000, that was as far as I was going to go, because everybody had been there forever.
You mean within that particular station?
Yeah.
Or that particular building, even?
Yeah, in that building. And because the Dawn Patrol had been there for 20 years. They weren't going anywhere at the time. Jay Gilbert wasn't going anywhere at the time.
Now, had Joel gone before?
Oh, no, Joel was still there. Joel just left about 2 years ago.
Oh, he was at EBN that long?
Yeah. He started in EBN I want to say 84, 85 is when he started there.
Yeah, wow.
But
that is one of those stations.
Yeah, so I knew he wasn't going anywhere. There was no room for advancement on the air staff. And then I got a call from Cleveland because Mitch Todd was taking the XM job. And so we went to Cleveland from Cincinnati. And I think my title, I still did 7 to Midnight on MMS. And then I was the imaging director just for MMS, but they consider me the production director for the cluster.
Okay.
So
this is kind of the big imaging guy leap then.
Cincinnati, I worked for Joel, with Joel, but, he was in charge. And then when I got to Cleveland, I had a staff, and those guys are still, all of them are still doing real well. AJ Allen, who's now with XM and Sirius, he was there with me. Jesse was there with me. Scott Glazer, who I think's in Sacramento now doing imaging, but all of them are still, doing real well.
There's a number of good talent that's come out of Cleveland.
Mm-hmm. It's a big radio town. Yeah. Ohio's a big radio state.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
But
So Cleveland obviously does well for you, and you're there, 3 years?
Cleveland was good. Here's the thing about Cleveland is I was still doing 7 to Midnight. That station was famous, especially back then, for going through just changes out the wazoo.
Yeah.
And they made me do mornings. I didn't want to do mornings, had no desire to do mornings. We were talking earlier before we started about my insomnia problems, and I just thought, this is terrible. And I remember telling the guy at the time, this is dumb. And he was like, no, just do what you do at night, in the morning it'll be great. And it was horrible. And he hated me, and I didn't like him, the program director, Jim Trapp. I don't mind saying that, because I'm sure if he heard this or hears about it, he hates me to this day. And I hate him to this day.
And you're both grown men, and you can say what you want to say.
Yeah, but it was just, I went there, when I first got there, one of my best friends was program director, and he left to be OM, and they brought Jim Trapp in.
Yeah.
And it just boiled down to, I didn't like the job, and I hated him with a passion, and so I got fired. I was fired. Get your stuff, you're gone. We got off the air one morning, and I didn't even expect it.
I was going to say, obviously, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, no, it was, I got off the air, and they called me down, and it was one of those, hey, can you come down real quick? I'm like, yeah, all right. But then I walked in, and Trapp was sitting in there. Kevin Matheny was the operations manager at the time.
Uh-huh.
And then the HR lady was there.
You think everyone knows who Kevin Matheny is?
Pig vomit.
All right.
And I did work for him for a long time. And
I've actually heard a lot of really good things about him. I've yet to meet him. I'm friends with him on Facebook.
Yeah. No, he's a good guy.
I haven't heard very many bad things about him.
It was funny because I'll tell you that later.
But yeah, maybe not get off on a tangent.
Yeah, because it's kind of a funny story because he was afraid of me after that.
Who, Kevin?
Matheny, yeah, because we never saw each other again. And then I went to a convention a couple of years ago, and he got word that I was there and was avoiding me.
Oh, really?
And finally, I saw him one night, and I started walking towards him, and as I got close to him, he got, I was going to punch
defensive?
Him.
Defensive?
Yeah, he really got in this defensive stance.
Really?
Here it comes. And I was like, wait, what are you
have doing? Have you punched old bosses in public?
No, never.
Okay.
No.
All right.
I don't have a reputation. I'm not a violent guy.
No.
And, so it worked out. But, so they fired me, and I would have fired me. Too. I remember when they said, we're letting you go, here's your severance deal. And I was like, okay. It was it was the day before my birthday too.
Really?
And I remember Kevin's the one, he's like, you don't have anything to say? He looked kinda confused, and I was like, what do you want me to say?
Beg you for my job that I don't even really want?
I'm like, So I was fired. And then
So how long were you on the beach?
6 months.
Okay.
6 months.
This is 00? What'd you say? Wait, what year is this about?
Yeah, this would have been... No, this would have been...
Like 02, probably?
Somewhere right around there.
Yeah.
And then just had a string of... I had one glimmer of hope there for a while, and XM flew me to D.C. I interviewed with them while I was there. They offered me a job, but it was... They wanted me to image all of their urban stuff. And at the time, this was, you know, they were still pretty new. And I was like, I don't do, I mean, I can, but I didn't. And like, well, we want to be different. So you take what you do.
That's kind of one of Mitch's things. Mm-hmm. He wants to put you out of your comfort zone and see what comes out of you.
Right? Yeah. So I had that. And then I had an interview at DC 101. But then the program director there got fired like that day. And so that never came through. And then I had an interview at, what was the station? HFS. And that was really bizarre because I loved, it was a legendary station and It was cool being there. And the PD, I wish I didn't remember his name, but he pretty much offered me the job. And then the next day, I get a phone call. He quit that day. Like we just walked out. And the GM called and he's like, hey, I understand he offered you a job. Obviously, I'll honor that offer, but, you know, it'd probably be better if you waited till we found the actual PD. You know, I was like, that's totally understandable. But it was just such a weird... You know, three things in D.C., and yeah. All of them went just insane.
So you don't go to D.C.?
Nope.
Okay.
So I got, and then I, you know, a couple more. Well, then, you know, I almost skipped over because it was such a horrible, horrible memory. I was born and raised in Lexington. That's where I started. Yeah. And Cumulus in Lexington called and offered me mornings. And they still, everywhere I went, still wanted me to image. And really, like when I was doing mornings on MMS.
So at this point, are you focused on being a, you know, the famous radio DJ? You're not really interested in also being a producer?
You know what? I probably wanted to be more of a producer than on air at that point. But no one really knew me that well. I mean, they knew me as a, you know, I'd had some success on the air and the Billboard Award and all that crap. So people knew me as an on-air person. They didn't really know me as a imaging guy. But yeah, everywhere I went, like when I was at MMS doing mornings, what other morning guy do you know that does imaging? Like I'd get off the air.
So you felt like just because you did the imaging, you were sort of getting pigeonholed into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other people that didn't already do imaging, well, they wouldn't be expected to, and they could just be the morning guy.
Exactly.
But since they were aware you did it.
Yeah. I mean, that was always a caveat. Like wherever I did, they're like, okay, well, you're still going to do imaging. I'm like, oh, all right. So I kept doing it. And so Cumulus and Lexington called and offered me mornings on their rock station, and I didn't have a job, and it was really good money for such a small market.
Yeah.
It was stupid money. And so I took it.
Can you ballpark stupid money for us? Just well, so we can
I
get
mean,
an idea?
It's nowhere close to anything now, but for Lexington's, I don't know, in the 120s, I think, as far as market size, and it would have been like 75, 80 grand.
Okay, yeah.
I was going to say,
if it was over six figures, that would...
That would be insane. I mean, they wouldn't do that. But and at the time when I was unemployed, I was like, yeah, that's awesome. So I got there literally probably 3 weeks, and I went to the PD, and I'm like, I can't stay. There's no way I'm staying here.
Why?
It was just... I can't even begin to describe how bad...
The work environment?
It was Cumulus. I don't mind saying that because they put me through hell when I took this job here in Dallas.
Why?
Because Dwayne Doherty, who was PD at the Edge, he'd called and he's like, hey, I heard you do imaging. I've got this opening. Gene Romano recommended you. And I'm like, thank God.
Who's Gene Romano?
Gene is, at the time, he's one of the senior vice presidents for Clear Channel.
Okay.
A programmer.
At the time, though, was he with?
He was still with Clear Channel. He was an SVP for Clear Channel.
Okay.
And so I went to the GM in Lexington and said, hey, I got this offer with Dallas. And he was cool. He was like, yeah, you know what, man? They were going to fly me down. He's like, go check it out, you know, then make a decision.
So you were straight with them before you even took the trip here.
Didn't even come down here until I went to it. So I went there, came down, really liked it, and flew back up. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm going to take this Dallas thing. You know, I'm really sorry. But they hadn't paid for my moving expenses. I mean, they weren't out of anything. They hadn't lost anything. They hadn't marketed anything.
Right.
And I thought, he even acted like it was no big deal. But once Cumulus Corporate got wind of it, And they didn't know who I was, and really it was obvious because I had to be on conference calls with attorneys and stuff. Didn't care. It was the fact that I was leaving them and going to Clear Channel.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't, and I don't know what kind of legal, I don't want to get any legal trouble, but it was horrible. Like, I was terrified.
Did you have a contract at that size market in that
situation? Well, the contract was insane. That was my attorney kept saying, he's like, don't worry about it because this contract's insane. It was the way it was worded. Basically, it was an exclusive employment agreement that covered, like, your life.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have
oftentimes
stood up. Like, you couldn't, according to this contract, if I went in and was like, hey, listen, I've always wanted to fry food at McDonald's, and that opportunity has arisen for me.
Yeah.
According to this contract, I couldn't do that. It was during the contract, you can only work for us, and it wouldn't have stood up anywhere. But they, and I think, and well, I'm sure that their attorneys knew it, but it gave them, if they wanted to press it, then I couldn't take any job.
Uh-huh. Sure.
So it forced Clear Channel had to remove their job offer. I had no job offer with Clear Channel Dallas because Cumulus was going to sue Clear Channel. And so I quit and hoped for the best, and it worked out in the long run. But it was 3 or 4 solid weeks where I was terrified that they were going to take it to the next level.
Were you still going into work every day at this point?
Yeah, I was.
It was kind of weird.
It was very weird. I mean, it was I wasn't doing any imaging then because I was going in at like 5:58 a.m. and leaving at 9:42 a.m.
Four in the door.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to see anybody or talk to anybody.
Uh-huh.
And those guys, I thought about that. It's weird because all those guys that were there locally, they kept telling me I was crazy to leave, and they were great company, and da da da. Every one of them was fired within 6 months of me leaving.
Yeah.
Every single one of them was gone.
Yeah.
So that was an awful experience. And I can't speak to how they are now at all, but my one dealing with them was really, really bad.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's, I worked for Clear Channel, and I loved it. It was actually right here near the top. We've literally gotten to zero of my official questions.
Sorry.
No, it's great. I knew that would be. I don't want to show up to an interview and look completely unprepared.
Yeah.
So I jot some stuff down. But I know that's the way these go.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because you don't really have time. We don't have time to sit around and think about how you got to where you are. And that's why my brain's like, I almost completely skipped over Lexington.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. But
in the last 10 years, how many times have you just sat here and gone, let's see here. What are the steps of my life that have me staring at this? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, personally, I really, really enjoyed Clear Channel. I loved it. They gave me so much to do. It's the reason I got to Dallas, all this stuff. But there's going to be people out there that say, you're crazy, Ryan. Clear Channel's awful. And I,
yeah.
So it's that way with any corporation.
Exactly. I mean, there's not, and I try to think of it as it's people. And it's the same way almost with the music industry when I hear people badmouth and I don't enjoy the music of Justin Bieber. I don't really care about Justin Bieber, but people give him a horrible time. But when you think about it, I'm like, you know what? He's just a dude. It started out, he was a kid that wanted to, he's a person. He wanted to be successful, and now he's successful. He worked for it. I remember, I don't know why, I mean, I just randomly chose Bieber out of my head, but I remember the first time he came here to Kiss, they had to order pizzas to bribe people to go to the performance room to watch him.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was sad. He was just this kid.
Yeah.
And there was on all page, hey, Justin Bieber, so-and-so recording artist, Justin Bieber's in the performance room. And nobody went. And so they came on about 10 minutes later, we were ordering pizza. And then, because they had to get bodies in there to put it on the internet. But that's the same way with Clear Channel. There's going to be a lot of people that hate him. And you can't really do that. It's individual people. Like when I think of Clear, and granted I'm employed by them, but when I think of Clear Channel, I think of the people that I work with, and I love all of them.
Yeah.
I don't have any problem with anybody. And it's been, there's been a real sea change in how they've been dealing with us from an imaging perspective within the last year and a half. And that started when they promoted Kelly. Because we'd now, for years, people, GMs, they didn't know what we did. Didn't have a clue. You're the commercial guy. No, not really. I'm not the commercial guy. I don't do commercials. What do you do? And then, so once Kelly got to New York and, she's there in the building with Tom Pullman and all those guys, is we actually kind of have a voice now.
So tell me, because that is quite literally, tell me about your experience and the opportunity as a Clear Channel here. Mm-hmm. So you're saying in about the last year and a half, and for those that don't know, you're talking about Kelly Doherty, who's also known as Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
She took a VP Creative Services, I'm not positive her official title, but in New York.
Vice President Creative National Programming Platforms.
Okay.
That's her official title.
So before she did that, you know, was it kind of what you just said, that whole nobody really knows what we do and they just kept firing
and
us?
And I think that's why, exactly, like if you look at Dallas, when I got, you know, like I said earlier, when I was hired here, it was just to do The Edge.
And how many imaging producers were there at that point? Every station had one?
Every station had one. KISS had two.
So that's seven? Six?
Six, because nobody, I still don't count the AM thing.
The 1190?
Yeah, I still don't count that. But
I didn't know that station existed in there.
And how long have you lived here?
7, 8 years.
There you go. But
no offense to our friends at 1190, though. Please.
Right. All one of you.
Okay, so so here's, and I don't want this to be negative. I want you to take this positive, uh-huh. but in the last 7, 8-ish years, just in this particular building of a Clear Channel market,
mm-hmm.
They went from one per station plus one, so mm-hmm. six or seven, five or six, down to just you.
Right.
So what does that say about the regard in which they hold imaging producers, but also about you?
Well, I don't know. I guess it's good for how they feel about me, I guess. I mean, I've got a great relationship with Patrick, who's the operations manager now, but for most of the time he's been here, he's just been our KISS program director. But, you know, a lot of it, and I think people bitch and moan and complain, but a lot of it's just a natural progression for, you know, what's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And since, you know, back in like 97 when I was at EBN, that was a full-time job. The imaging director for WEBN, that's a full-time, legitimate. You get
because
there
because you're turning out so much content.
Yeah. I mean, constant, you know, morning show stuff, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And as, you know, people, it's funny because people blame Clear Channel, they blame CBS, they blame the big companies, but it's not the big company's fault. It's the fact that the audience has changed what they expect and what they want.
Sure.
Now people will say I'm wrong. I still think people want to be entertained. That's the one part where I'll kind of break off and go, you know what, if it's funny, people will like it.
Mm-hmm.
I think especially, you know, with on a classic rock or an active rock station, if people would rather hear like a quick John Frost thing that makes them laugh than Flying High Again. That's just my opinion.
Okay.
For the 900th time. But the, so I think it's a combination of that. And Clear Channel's been very fair to me. I mean, when they would, you know, like when they brought KISS, when they fired the guy that was doing KISS, you know, they called me and I'm like, hey, we had to let so-and-so go. And they always gave me a raise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it wasn't what they didn't just give me his money.
Exactly.
But it was a
raise.
That
would blow the whole purpose of getting rid of the guy.
Yeah. But it was always, every single time it happened, they would give me a raise. And
Do you think that it's what you're talking about, the fact that we simply don't, there's not as much content, and the content has to be better while there's less of it.
Right.
Do you think, though, that you're enough, like, Or has that really cut it too much because it's by virtue of the way the economy is and the way the business is?
You know,
do you think you're the guy? Like, this is, you're all they need here.
No, they need more. I mean, I would answer that differently depending on the week. But like this week, I'm doing, if I wasn't doing all the national stuff I'm doing, then I think one's enough. I really do. But I'm doing all the voiceover for the national programming for News Talk and Country. And then I'm also doing the iHeartRadio app promos every, you know, couple weeks.
Do they make Clear Channel Creative Services?
Well, that's Kelly's team. Like, there's a team in Clear Channel now, and I don't know how those, maybe, I don't, again, somebody will correct me. That's when we all met in New York before we rolled out iHeart this year. We all met in New York, which was cool,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I thought about it. I'm like, you know, 5 years ago, if somebody went in and said, hey, I want to bring all the imaging people to New York City for a couple of days and put them up in a nice hotel, they would...
like, what?
Well, first of all, what are imaging people? And second right. of all, what the hell for? But it was, you know, we all met in New York, and John, they flew Frost in, and Eric Chase also.
Uh-huh.
And so, Yeah, that's the team. We do all the promos for the group contesting. And see, that's another thing too that's lightened the load in a lot of markets is, you know, we're doing a lot of group contesting. Yeah. iHeartRadio takes over
lots of national initiatives that right. take away some of that space for the yeah. super local but mm-hmm. constantly changing things.
Like KISS here in Dallas, KISS still is hyper local, hyper on top of things, and I'm always, no matter what my workload is, KISS is a priority. You know, especially with what we've been going through with losing the morning guy, and when we lost Craddock, back at the end of July, I mean, KISS is even more so now because it has been and continues to be, at least right now, a ratings giant. And you know, we'll see how that goes in the next couple months. But
their first numbers looked great.
Yeah,
without him.
Yeah,
and there's going to be some of that whole well. You know, the new people that want to come in and say, wait a minute, but I never listened to Craddock before, but now mm-hmm. let me come and check him out.
It'll be interesting to see, to watch. But it's been, KISS always is a priority, and then, you know, the national stuff. And I haven't even gotten to, you know, all the voiceover stuff that I get every day.
So before we get to the voiceover side of your, you know, responsibilities, you're imaging, how many stations you got here? Four or five stations?
Five. I do everything. Yeah, I do the Edge and... Oh, you know what? I don't do ZPS. Brian Price does ZPS.
Okay. That's actually the station I was thinking of.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you don't do the Eagle, or you just don't do Russ Martin show?
No, I don't do... I do as little of the Eagle as I can get by with.
Okay.
Great guy down in Tampa, Josh Jensen.
That's right.
Handles the bulk of it. And it's convenient because, you know, he's doing 98 Rock, and it's pretty much, you know, the same voice guy, and but he does a great job with it. And I hated... I don't want to say I've outgrown it, but I've had my, and you probably have know what I'm talking about, and a lot of people probably will identify, but I did active rock for so long. Like when we flipped it back, you know, it was Sunny and it was the Hispanic station. When we flipped it back to the Eagle and I was doing it, I'm like, I did not miss, like I was done. Like active rock, yeah. I just don't want to do it
anymore. You were worn out.
Yeah. I don't know. I'd be interested to see if anybody has felt this way, but I just didn't. It wasn't fun for me anymore.
Do you think that's a active rock problem, or would that be the case if, like, you stopped doing KISS or a CHR format, and then 3 years from now or 5 years from now they said, hey.
You know, I never thought of it that way, but it may be kind of symptomatic of that because it just felt like the same. At least, like, with KISS and with Now and Edge, it's always changing. The music's mm-hmm. always changing. Yeah. With active rock, I'm like, How many
ads do they have on the
Inner Sandman and all? Like, yeah. I don't want to. I've had enough of Inner Sandman. So I don't know. That may speak. You know, active rock that was on a rebound. I thought it was dead.
I was going to say
for years, but there's markets. 98 Rock and Tampa is a great example. I kept thinking I don't know why we have that thing on the air, and I mean it's boom back in the top five.
Yeah.
So.
It is true. I mean, I think the general consensus is that rock as a format is dying, has mm-hmm. been dying, is almost dead. But there's some markets.
Yeah.
They got a great rock station that, yeah.
Well, there's and look at Seattle's, their numbers are huge. 98 Rock's coming back. MMS is huge. Now, that's an interesting all, you know, together difference because you got a talk morning show and a talk afternoon drive and then music and middays and overnights. But they're both drive times and on MMS now are pure talk. There's no songs at all.
Really?
Mm-hmm. But that's what saved the station. That station was going to be dead, I think. I mean, nobody ever said that to me, but I couldn't think of any reason to keep it on the air.
So I was going to switch gears to the voiceover side of things, but you seem to be, as we talk here, very plugged into, or at least semi-plugged into, a lot of big stations around the country. I guess what I'm leading to, do you do any monitoring? Do you have time to really hear what's happening outside your world?
No, not really, but
are you just a radio geek and like to read stuff here and there?
Yeah, man. I think that's part of the. I think if you don't do that, you're not going to survive. I think you at least have to stay on top of what's going on, and even stuff that you wouldn't care about, you still need to be on top of what's going on as far as format flips and, you know, and what's trending and what's important.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a key to survival these days. Well, and actually, I'll take that back and say always. I used to be way more into it because I'd have more time. I remember I logged into All Access the other day and thought, I still have the same username and password I had since 96.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah. I used to live on there. And I think that's one of the keys to continuing.
So talk about the voiceover side for a minute, because I know you were voicing a lot of stations. Primarily, or to start, are these mostly gigs that have come through Clear Channel? You know, are these basically kind of like a guy would voice track a lot of different Clear Channel stations? Are these.
Yep. I mean, that's the simple answer. Yeah, it's weird how I got I did a spot here. Like, I didn't voice here. I mean, I was just producing. And I did a commercial here, and the AE called me, and she's like, oh, my gosh, great news. Coke wants to use that nationally.
Really?
And I was like, hey, good for you. That's awesome. And then I told maybe Ann DeWig or somebody, and she's like, oh, my God, what how much money are you getting? And I was like, she gave me, and this is a true story, I got a tote bag that had a Coke shirt and a Coke squeeze bottle. And she starts laughing, and I was like, what? She's like, oh, my God, do you realize how much money you would make if you did that? I was like, did what? Because I did it. She's like, no. I mean, she goes, yeah, you did it, but you didn't really do it because you just gave it to him. And so I thought, well, I'm going to do voiceover then. That's the first time. And I had people tell me before I should do it, and I thought they were crazy because at that point, I'd only worked with John Wells and...
You were producing other voices like John Wells.
John Wells, Keith Eubanks...
And Deke is awesome, but you're no John Wells, right?
That's
the mindset.
I was just like, I mean, I wasn't even a Keith Eubanks. And and then I worked with Ann for years and years. And so I just never thought I could do that. But that one thing made me, and it just was the Dallas Observer was laying out, and it was the year-end Best Of issue.
Uh-huh.
And I flipped through it that same day, and it said Best Talent Agent in Dallas. And it was Suzanne Horn was the winner that year. And so I called this Suzanne Horn person, and I was like, hey, here's where I work. I want to do voiceover. And she was like, yeah, okay, good luck. And, you know, send me a demo. Uh-huh. I don't really take. And so I sent her a demo, and she called that day, and she's like, can you come over? So I started, my voiceover career started doing stuff around here, like in my spare time.
Sure.
And then I had one of those voices.com accounts.
Yeah.
And it was under my real name. And this was weird. A guy named Rob Williams, who I'd worked with for years in Cincinnati, called, and he's like, hey, and I knew it was him. Like, I saw when it called, you know, I was like, oh, Rob. So,
but he didn't know he was calling you?
Yeah.
Right.
So he calls, and he's like, hey, and he's talking to me, I'm fine. I'm like, well, dude, what the hell? What are you doing?
Why are you being weird?
Yeah, and he was like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was being weird. I'm like, dude, it's Deke. He's like, what? So, yeah, so he was doing Imogen 55 KRC in Cincinnati, and... for whatever, I didn't work out there, but Scott Stanley was doing WLW, and he heard me, and he was like, oh, and so that was, WLW was my first voiceover station.
How did he hear you?
From Rob. I think he heard, you know.
And Rob heard you from your voices.com demo?
Yeah, yeah.
Was it a radio imaging demo up there, or was it like your commercial demo?
I had three or four demos, and one of them was a completely faked radio imaging
demo.
Sure.
So quite literally, though, someone that knew you but didn't know it was you heard an imaging demo on voices.com, which I know is not...
The Canadian website,
voices.com. Right, and it's not a huge imaging site.
No.
You know, okay, so then he says, well, you're not for me, but then...
Well, his PD, he wanted me, but the PD was like, no, he sounds too young, and, you know...
So they wanted more of the traditional...
Right, and because they were, that station was very conservative, and he was trying to make it more fun, but the PD didn't want to go that way. And so, yeah, but somehow Scott heard it.
And the little old station, WLW, is your first...
Yeah.
So... This
everything else has been a disappointment. That's so not true.
This is, you get passed around the company and they're like, yeah, we want to get Deke. You know, we want that guy.
Well, you know,
or have you marketed yourself separately?
No, I haven't marketed myself at all. Okay. I mean, I need to and I want to. I don't have time to.
I was going to say, I don't know that you need to.
Well, no, I mean, I feel like I should. I mean, I feel like I could do more. But I just literally don't have time to. Now, I had... I was with Benstown for a while until that Cumulus thing happened with them, and I quit Benstown. That was an ugly story. But it was because I'd sworn after my Cumulus thing I would never work for Cumulus. I'm like, if you know, I don't. And Chachi was cool. He was. There was only one guy there that wasn't cool about it, but he soured the whole experience for me. But so I left there. But thankfully, Premiere started voiceover barter.
Did you find that, you know, you were getting business because it was kind of an internal Clear Channel thing where people were like, yeah, I'm on Clear Channel. I want that guy. And
the people, well, you know, we got the imaging share sites. You get a lot of exposure that way. And then truly, a lot of it is just knowing, like, you know, we've got this, the six or eight senior vice presidents, and they go market to market. And they're, you know, hey, this guy's not working out. You're probably overpaying for him anyway. You know, throw Deke on, you'll save money.
Mm-hmm.
And I get a lot of criticism for that, and I don't care, because I think a lot of it is I don't want to say it's jealousy, but I will say I'm fortunate to be in that situation where I feel like I'm compensated more than fairly for what I do. There are some voiceover people who have said ugly things about me because, you know, I don't ask a station in Peoria to pay me $800 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you do, you're an asshole. I mean, that's, if you can get that, great. I'm, you know, I'm not going to fight somebody for that, but if
these days you rarely get $800 a month in the top 10, well, top 20 market.
It's weird. I mean, I wouldn't get into specifics about pricing, but there, you know, there's top 70 stations that pay me more than top 10 stations.
Yeah.
I mean, it's market to market, and I think that's how you have to do it. And that's why I've never signed with an agent, because I had one. Well, I mean, this wasn't a bad thing to say, but when I'd been approached by two of the big agencies, and one of the VPs
for radio imaging.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming I can guess both of them.
And one of the VPs, he was just point blank. He's like, "Look, dude, you're good, but part of the reason I use you so much is because I can pick up the phone and call you and go, hey, here's what we got. You want to do it?" He goes, "If I had to pick up a phone and call an agent, I wouldn't be calling that much."
Mm-hmm.
And he's not slighting agencies or anything like that. It's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
And
he knows he can get a price with you.
Yeah.
You're his go-to guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
nothing wrong with that.
You know, and that's part of, you know, I'm very loyal to Clear Channel, and they've been good to me. And, you know, I know, like we were talking about earlier, a lot of people have had different experiences, but, you know, I think you have to look at it case by case.
Mm-hmm. Ballpark for us now, you know, how many stations in total do you produce the imaging for?
Do I produce for?
Yeah.
Five. I'd say five.
Okay. And then, you know, ballpark, how many are you voicing now?
On a daily, like, retainer, they're giving me 70.
You're on 70 now.
I'd say between 60 and 70.
Yeah, that's great.
And then, that's not counting premium choice, which is the really tiny markets, you know, that run the stuff, but that's not much of a time drain. But then all the group contesting for News Talk, but that's just, like, it's just voicing, you know. That's not, how long does it take? Like, I got three pages for News Talk today. I was done in 5 minutes.
Right.
So,
yeah.
All News Talk and country, but I don't count those as far as the, here's what you got to do today. So, and I do everything the day I get it. Usually within 2 hours of getting it. Because if not, it won't get done.
That's how I try and do it.
Yeah,
I don't know about you, but I use my Gmail to keep all my stuff in line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all kind of tasks that I have. And I'm neurotic about having too much crap sitting there.
Yeah. I gotta get rid of it, or it'll be on my brain. I'm like, I gotta just do this.
Yes. I gotta be crossing off lists.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I've got so many other things here. Let's talk about your equipment real quick. because I'm sitting here.
Yeah.
Let me say now, because I have to bring it up, I instantly saw a version of Pro Tools that I didn't even remember using. It's been so long.
Yep.
You are on the big Pro Tools 7.4.
Yep.
It
still works.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're recording on it right now. So what's the deal with that?
I can't really explain it, because I've told you, you know, there's another, well, I don't even know what that Mac, what's that called?
You got a big Mac Pro tower. You probably have probably an 8-core in there. I mean, we didn't rip it open or
turn
it on.
It's not plugged in. It's not hooked up. It's been sitting there for over a year. And, you know, the engineers kept saying, well, we need to transfer everything over. What did they do? They didn't transfer everything from the hard drive over. Like, tell us a time when you're not going to be busy. And I'm like, that time doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And engineers don't work.
So
remember when engineers used to work at night?
Yeah.
I remember. I remember at nighttime, that's when you'd see them running around.
Uh-huh.
Now, you couldn't get them to
So let me say, this might be a difference between us. I mean, you obviously know your way around a DAW. I mean, you know your way around an editor.
I don't know anything about it.
So you're not really a gearhead. You're not a tech nerd. Because me, the moment that computer came into my room, I wouldn't even have asked an engineer. I would have ripped it out of the box. Mm. I would have started the transfer myself. This thing would have been up within a few hours. So you're just like, dude, I need to work. So if it gets done, it gets done.
Well, I can tell you, and I think I'm like that because when I first got to Cincinnati, again, I was the low man there. And this was, and I've talked to guys that are, you know, gearheads, and they were like, oh my God. Because Randy Michaels did an experiment back then, and he gave the engineers, he's like, hey, here's unlimited budget. I build the best production studio you can build with this, you know. So they built this room, and it was amazing. Like, they had special furniture built, even for back then, where the monitors were down and facing up at me. So, you know, I wasn't, you know, straining anything. I mean, it was unbelievable. There's racks everywhere, and it had sat empty for 2 months because people were like, everybody was using Odysseys. And they're like, and it was Pro Tools, which was pretty new at that point for radio.
Yeah.
And so when I got there, they're like, here's your room, new guy, have fun. And so I still have, like, if you open up my templates, it's the same template I used in 1998.
That's funny.
So it's just what I'm used to, and I still have, you know, I've always had five stereo tracks. I mean, nothing's changed. If you took a screenshot in 98, it would look exactly the same.
And you really just don't have a desire? Like, it doesn't wear at you that, well, you know, you're six or seven versions behind?
No, I didn't even know I was. I mean, the one thing that I am looking forward to and will upgrade to is if they actually get that the not the real time
offline bounce.
Yeah, they have that.
11. Yeah,
is it for real?
Yeah, that's an 11. Well,
but also, I like to stay on the good side of the engineer. So as long as everything works,
yeah, you don't want to be the guy that's like, hey man, I upgraded again and I screwed up this.
Yeah,
I upgraded my this and I broke that.
You didn't even notice this. This is the best part. Look at this, is the PC. I don't know if you can see that. That's an IBM NetVista.
I love the CD-ROM drive.
Yeah, it's got the seat, which they replaced. Look, it's still got a floppy drive.
Wow. So what does that run?
That's what I do all my writing. And
So you have a KVM switch on your profit screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, see, that's just your internet computer. That's your...
Yeah.
Your machine for miscellaneous junk.
There's sound and stuff on it, but I can't. At this point, this thing is so old, but I'm really kind of impressed that it still runs.
Yeah.
Like when
So now it's more of an endurance thing.
It is.
I could change it, but now I just want to see how far I can take it.
Yeah.
You're like Kramer in the episode buying the car.
You saw, like, I just highlighted an email. I mean, that's going to be the hourglass thing just to load this email.
I can't even... If things
that makes you insane,
if
technology
just makes me insane right now. Uh-huh. If technology slows me down, that's the antithesis of what we should be doing. You know what I mean?
No, I agree.
Technology should advance us and make our world easier.
But look around this room. I've got a CDR, real-time CDR, turned off.
Yeah.
That switcher there below, don't use that. There's for some reason, I guess that's a headphone amp.
Uh-huh.
No idea. That Denon CD player hadn't been turned on in probably 3 years.
Yeah.
There's
I love the tube television,
which doesn't
here,
work and is not hooked up to anything.
Which isn't, so why not get rid of it? Why
it's
not?
It's a shelf. I got my Wanda Sykes and my Bill Cunningham.
I do see the bobblehead collection.
Yeah. And and then there's a cassette player and a DAT machine. Now, if you put a DAT in that DAT machine, you will no longer have a DAT because it will eat it.
Really?
Yep. It will eat any DAT you
put
in
there. So again, you don't remove all of this stuff because why? And there'll just be holes in your rack spaces.
Yeah, there's this huge hole. I mean, what would I put? Look, there's a VCR. I forgot that was there. There's an actual VCR.
This is a second VCR right here, I think.
Oh, that's a DVR.
Oh, that's a TiVo.
Yeah.
That's an old TiVo.
But it's not hooked up to anything.
And so now, to be honest, after I've inspected everything, I'm startled by the Digio 3.
Well, it's not even, and that's the one thing that bothers me. I went on vacation 1 year and came back, and they're like, hey, we got your new Pro Tools in. And I said, right on. And I came in here, and I said, where is the board? Because this was here, this Digio 003.
Uh-huh.
This is not a board. And the guy that did it, he's proud. He's like, there it is.
It's a control surface.
And I said, okay, look, all that is the hunk of plastic crap. It's this.
You're
just
a mouse guy, by the way. In Pro Tools, you're a mouse guy.
I don't touch it. I don't ever. Yeah. I had that studio that I was talking about in Cincinnati that was so amazing. They had, it was one of the first Mackie Hueys.
Uh-huh.
And so And you could have, you know, done everything on that, but I thought, why? You know, I mean, it's cool when you set the stuff and you can watch the faders go up and down. But that's, for me, that's it.
It's funny. It's funny how that's literally, there's a line in the sand, though, in producers.
Yeah.
Where, and it typically more radio imaging producers are completely in the box, in the screen, mouse and keyboard.
Yeah.
And then you get out more into the world of, you know, post-production.
Oh, they're all on
music.
The,
and they have to have a control server. You have to do it with your hands.
But, yeah, I don't touch any. And not only do I not touch it, I know if somebody's been in here because something's been touched, because I wouldn't know how to fix it. See, that's another problem. I just never have taken the time. Like, I loved when Eric, I told Eric, when I saw him in New York, I'm like, man, you need to update your, remember when Eric Chase would publish his, you know, his Pro Tools
on Chase Cuts?
So,
I loved it. I rented them all out and made a book out of them.
I did too, because I didn't know how to do tons of stuff. Like, I would figure it out, because I had to figure it out.
Uh-huh.
But then I wouldn't remember how I did it. Like, I remember one of the Kiss FM contests that we do, where I was the angry ATM, and the program director wanted to do it again, and I was like, oh crap, I have no idea how I did that setting. I don't know what plugin it was or anything. So it took me like 3 hours one day just hitting buttons and trying to figure it out. So yeah, I mean, everything, the way I look at it is, I get my work done, everything sounds fine, and you know, nobody's complaining.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, your stuff sounds great.
Well,
so
thanks.
As far as the machine then, I mean, do you have templates and presets you're using on your voice and you haven't really adjusted them? Or
no, well, I use the, because of the noise in the room, I put the gate on there and then the L1 limiter. And that's it. I don't know why that audio track's on there.
Is that how you send your stuff out?
Yeah, it's the gate and the L1 limiter.
You basically gate it for noise, you limit it a bit. So that's to kind of give it a little bit of pump, you know, a little extra fatness.
Yep.
And then
and I've got a few stations that don't want any, well, they don't want the, I'll turn the limiter off because they don't want it. And that's because they already, you know, they've got their settings and they've got a limiter.
And they've got a guy who knows what he's doing, or a gal who knows what she's doing. So
And then I've got one guy, Dylan Evers, who's a great guy. And he produces for Eric, and he doesn't want.
Dylan.
He doesn't want any.
No, he wouldn't.
I mean, he gets like. I remember.
He also owns a studio.
Yeah, he got really. Like, he wasn't angry, but he was irritated. Like I left, maybe it was the gate or something I left on. And he's like, I told you I didn't want anything on it.
Yeah,
I'm like, all right, dude.
Well, you know, but that thing.
But yeah,
he's the epitome though. He's got a studio.
Oh,
he
man.
Wants completely dry, colorless audio.
Every time he sends me copy now, it always says naked. Thanks.
Naked. Yeah.
Yep. So no, he's great. But yeah, I remember it was like, oh, I didn't know you were that serious about. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, you're imaging a top 40, you know, young woman station.
Yeah.
You're imaging a station for men, Lone Star, right?
No, I don't do that one.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, Brian Price does that.
Oh, you did say that. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I always associate you with that station.
Yeah.
Do you still have a show on there?
No, I did when it was that weird hybrid experiment thing.
Yeah.
That was the only time.
It was like a country /
yeah,
because
I knew the format, so they had me do. Yeah. Because especially at night, that was cool. I mean, it was playing old 97s and Uncle Tupelo.
I got the impression that was your wheelhouse. Like you.
Yeah,
you
I mean,
really
that's,
enjoyed
that's
that.
What I love. I love doing it, and that just was, you know, it worked out because I was here, and so.
Well, then you also got the edge. So anyway, the point is you have to sort of stay connected with a lot of different demographics. You know, is there anything, you know, besides things you just said, like watching some TV shows, do you really have to do things? Or
I think with life and being married and having kids and my wife's friends
it
around
keeps
all the time.
You...
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much know. Like, there are times when I have to say to people, like, hey, you know, the audience isn't going to know what the heck you're talking about. You know, because when some of the guys here will throw out ideas for Kiss or for now, and you know, a lot of sports stuff. The guys love the sports thing, and I'm like, they won't know what. I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm not a big sports guy, but
which is probably good for a guy who does Kiss and now.
Yeah,
now's definitely a hot AC adult CHR for people that are not familiar with the market. The Edge, are you guys positioning the Edge really more towards females anyway, or
I don't know. I can't say because I don't know. It feels that way.
It feels that way to me.
But it felt that way even more when I got here 10 years ago. When I got here 10 years ago, we played...
Dave Matthews.
We played Dave Matthews. We were playing The Outkast.
Yeah.
Playing the Eminem with Lose Yourself was playing. I mean, it was a lot of stuff. And everybody going, huh? And then, you know, over the years it changed. But yeah, I think it's swinging. But I think musically things are kind of swinging that way.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are finally tired of getting screamed at a little bit.
Which is, again, back to that whole the demise of rock type situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's still good to rock. It's just not, yeah. I think people finally, I don't know. Well, I mean, there still is an audience that loves the angry white guy stuff, but I don't get it.
One more thing, because I meant to bring this up earlier. I noticed you've got your setup here. You're basically in your Pro Tools machine. How much do you stay connected, though, over here on the PC side where you have your email and interacting with people? Are you a big email guy is what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I think I have to be.
So you are kind of constantly trying to stay updated with what's happening, mm-hmm. and people around here communicate with you via email.
Well, it's funny, like with KISS is so time-consuming that we've actually got Priscilla who, like, she knows, like, I couldn't get through a day without her. I say that on the day that she's not here. But she will email me 5-6 times a day, where's this?
She kind of keeps you in order.
Yeah, I mean, she's like the go-between.
Okay.
And if I didn't have her, I should have said that earlier. If I didn't have her or someone like, well, it's really her, because she got laid off a couple years ago, and then brought her back, thankfully. But I think you need people like that to survive in our world of consolidation. Because it's not that I'm unorganized, but there's so much going on with so many stations that you kind of have to have somebody.
I keep saying one more question. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
In Clear Channel, I know they've sort of not just the restructuring, and they've had to cut back on different, you know, talent, and, you know, mm-hmm. imaging producers have been let go over time. But they definitely are going to more of this kind of top-down system where they have key players around the country, you being one. In your estimation, is this kind of the way that company and maybe even the industry is going to go, where you'll have these sort of key players?
Oh, I don't know. Strategically located? I don't know, because I don't consider... That's nice you say, but I don't consider myself a key player so much. But,
well, I mean, you're doing every station in the fifth market. You're doing a lot of the national initiatives, you know, working with your team in New York. There's only a few Deeks in Clear Channel.
I think that's the way, though, to think of it is that it really is a team. And one of the things, a great example for how, because one of the big complaints I hear is, well, you know, they never gave me a chance to get started. You know, I never got a chance to work my way up. I never got this. And I think about this guy, Big Daddy Kyle is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the imaging guy in Chattanooga at US 101, which is not a big market. I mean, US 101 is a legendary station. It's mm-hmm. been around forever. He's a young guy. I think he's probably the age I was when I started. But he's good. Like, the guy's, he's good. He gets it. His writing's good. And that's the one thing I should have talked about earlier is how bad writing's gotten. But anyway, his writing's good. His production skills are good. And he's still there at US 101, but there were so many country stations that were using me that heard his stuff, and they're like, hey, I love what you're doing at US 101. And so, like, now he's getting paid for 7 more stations. Each one of those stations are paying him monthly to just re-tag what he's already doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's... People don't realize that, or I don't want to say that people are lazy, but there's a definite change.
They're quicker to say that a budget is getting rid of humans than admit the truth that the cream rises to the top.
Well,
and
I mean,
the talent is getting rewarded when it's talent.
Yeah, rarely, and it has happened, especially in the big one in 08, that big layoff. But that, you can't even blame Clear Channel. That was above even Clear Channel. That was when the Bain privatization went through. But rarely have I said, oh, well, that guy didn't deserve it. And nobody deserves it, but...
But you can kind of see, it's like, yeah, he didn't work
man.
Very hard.
Yeah.
He didn't improve himself.
You
he
gotta,
was kind of an a-hole.
I mean, I'm sure you were the same way. When I started, I mean, I couldn't... They literally had to kick me out. They had to go, look, you have to go. I would do overnights, and I would stay produce. And they're like, look, the actual people that really work here... Like, I remember that one guy said to me, like, hey, dude, people that really work here need to get in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, screw you, I work here. I'm like, okay, whatever, kid. But so... You know, but that guy's a great example. I mean, not only, I don't know what he's making, but it's an ass load more than I made at his age.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, and he's in a very small market. So,
yeah, he gets to stay in the smaller market at a great station doing what he loves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's probably making pretty good money.
Better
than he'd make at a lot of other jobs.
He probably makes more than somebody doing what I do in a top 10 market you know, truly, I think he probably does. There's a lot of opportunity out there because it's stuff that's still
needed. So you're
pretty
positive about this business and this side of the business.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the business, I'm positive that people still want to be entertained, you know, and they still consume audio entertainment. Uh-huh. I don't know what the delivery system's going to be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a whole, you could go on for days about that.
Yeah.
But, I do know this, that, you know, when you look at a company like Clear Channel and, you know, from an imaging perspective, you know, we are imaging the hell out of stuff. I mean, I saw figures on how many iHeartRadio promos ran leading up to the concert. And so they say what you want, but they understand the importance of branding.
iHeart was the second or third biggest advertiser for that month.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
It was, the impressions were in the millions. Yeah. I mean, it was insane. But that's the refreshing thing is that, and I don't know if where it comes from, but I know from that they believe in the importance of audio branding. And so as long as people still believe that, then we'll still have jobs.
How long do you think you'll be right here like this this room?
I don't know.
That's
a scary question.
Well, not to say on the negative side, but do you have aspirations?
No.
You're a guy. You want to be the creative guy. You want to be the talent. You like this. You don't.
I never. Yeah, when we took the job in Dallas, our original plan was to stay here for a year, maybe two, and go back to Cincinnati. And Cincinnati knew that and called. Probably 18 months into it, and I went home. And I'm like, hey, they're ready for me to come back. And my wife's like, nah, I like it here.
Who was EBN?
Uh huh. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so I stayed here, and I literally, you know, I'm very lucky. A lot of my career has been right place, right time. A lot of it was that revolving door of program directors that went on to be vice presidents in Cincinnati. I mean, I realize and recognize that. A lot of it was, you know, being able to work with Joel Moss, you know, I mean, and Tom Owens, who's no longer with the company. But both those guys are creative in a way that I will never be. But they are, and I was able to work with them on a daily basis and absorb as much as I can. I mean, you know, and even people have forgotten his name, but Frank Wood Frank Wood Jr. that started EBN, you know, those guys, I don't know if it was Frank or Tom that said, you know, the best imaging is the typewriter is the most important piece of equipment. And
we didn't get into writing, like you said.
Yeah, and it's a shame because, God, it's... I mean, you'll hear stuff and go, wow, that's genius.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's and that was the one thing that was pounded into me in Cincinnati, and I think why Cincinnati did so well for so many years is that the writing was genius. I mean, everything, and that's what people, as imaging guys, and I think we've gotten away from it finally, thankfully, in my opinion, with all the, you know, crazy crap going on and bouncing around. Everything had to be beat mixed, and everything had to be that. But I think, you know, when it gets down to it, I think the most important thing is communication. Whatever the message is, you know, how you communicate it. It's for a while we were all trapped in trying to outdo each other on the technical.
Right.
At least it seemed that way to me.
No, I've thought that a long time.
Yeah, and you're like, well,
you're producing for other producers instead of the listener.
It's like, even when I compare it to philosophy, when I was doing all my philosophy stuff, the people that would write, they were writing for other philosophers, and people that would benefit from their knowledge and benefit from what they're doing, they didn't know what the hell they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the same thing. Like I would hear things and think, oh, that's cool sounding, but I don't know what you're promoting or what.
Exactly. And what's the message and who are you trying
no
to talk to?
No clue what you're doing there. But that's, I don't know. I'm glad. I think, and you know what? It's kind of sad to say this, but I think the only reason we've gotten away from that is because we don't have time to do that anymore. We're so busy that we don't have time to sit around. Now, I noticed last night Roger Keeler, but he doesn't sleep, but Roger was up at like 2 a.m. making music beds for Halloween. But, you know, that's great. I couldn't do it. When I leave here, I don't want to. You know, people have asked, you know, Kelly asked me what system I had at home, and I'm like, I don't.
If I recall, I mean, I haven't talked to her in a long time, but she didn't either.
I think she does now.
Does she now?
From moving to New York and just transportation being so different there.
Well, I was always jealous, though. I mean, you know, she was like, yeah, you know, I voiced a crap ton of stations, and I'm, you know, one of the best in the business. I got Kiss FM LA, blah, blah. But no, I don't have anything at home.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to do it at work, and if you get me there, cool.
Yeah, I don't have anything at home either.
So you've never felt the need to set it up?
I did. You know what? I did a deal with Reader's Digest where I did a ton of condensed audiobooks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many, and then I've seen them in like truck stops.
Really?
Yeah. And but so I set up something at home then because I couldn't really come in here, and somebody would have been like, "What are you? You can't sit in here and read books all day." Clear Channel would have had a problem with that. So so yeah, I set up something at home, but then we moved, and when we moved, I never set it back up again.
Yeah.
And I'm glad because I do stations in London and Lebanon. I do stuff overseas.
What do you have in London?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
It's you remember English Chris that works over at TM?
Yeah.
He sends me stuff. I mean, almost weekly he'll send me stuff.
Oh, good.
And you know, he's in Manchester, but so yeah, there's you get stuff at weird hours, and I don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they're there. So,
I know for me, there's been some times where I really needed my home studio.
Yeah.
You know, on a Saturday or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You haven't, you know.
I just drive in.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. One final, because I'll let you, we got to actually do real work. You know, the question I ask everyone at the end, you know, if you want to break it down to one key piece of advice, especially as you kind of talked about the younger people that may think they don't have a chance to shine and mm-hmm. to come up in this business, you know, what's your key one piece of advice if you got to break it down to one thing?
Hard work. I mean, and to know, you know, I always kind of cringe because that can be taken to an extreme where, and you, I'm sure you can identify with getting bombarded with demos and uh-huh. people following up. And I know that you're not going to, you know, but I think there's a fine line there where you cross over into being an annoyance and then people ignore you,
mm-hmm.
especially in this business, because it is, whether we want to admit it or not, there is still an element of ego involved. And, you know, you're like, well, I don't want to go away, you know, but if you're cool and you work hard, I think you just, like you said, your cream rises and you're recognized, especially now because people, and you know, we don't have as many people and stuff is still needed. There's still mm-hmm. a level, you know, that hasn't gone down. So if you're there and you can provide it, then you're going to move up. You're going to
yeah.
be, you know, I think the way, especially, I can only speak within Clear Channel, but the way we've got it arranged with the vice presidents, you know, your name, hey, where'd this come from? You know, and boom, you know, you're on somebody's mind.
The structure.
And they hit, you know, if a Brad Harden is, you know, working in Tampa and then goes to Houston, he's like, hey, I got this guy in Tampa, or I got this guy, you know, he knows him from Las Vegas or where, any of his markets.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely still, you know, people talk about there's no farm league. There is. It's just, you got to be willing to do it. Like I don't understand why this went away, because when I first, you know, when Mark Chase said, have you done imaging? I was started doing it and I wasn't getting paid extra for it. It was just, you just did it. And now people are like, I'm not doing that. They don't pay me to do that. Why would I do that? That's somebody, I'm like, no, it's, no one's doing it. The one thing that does drive me crazy is the jock still. Because when I was doing on air, and jocks, you know, I did a bunch of sweepers that had my name in it and stupid stuff and all that. But they still kind of in the day like, yo, D, can you hook me up with 10 sweepers? Like, no. First of all, nobody gives a shit. Nobody cares. Nobody cares that you're dropping the bomb on them and all that.
Bill Smith is the midday yeah. talent. Nobody, no one gives a crap about you or your name.
You're not the night slammer, and you're not. But
those days are done.
But I said, if you want to do them and play them, fine. You know,
then go you do
the,
them.
Go in the production studio and do them.
Right.
Well, I'm not doing that. It's your job. I'm like, well, that's not my job. But but there's still, you know, that whole I'm not doing that. It's not my job. I think that's what gets most people. You know, and it's not just true in our business.
No,
it's true in anything.
Are we like old men right now? Because I think we're both thinking the same general thing here.
Yeah, we
is
are.
Is cranky, it a generation? Old, I mean,
I don't know if it's generational or if it's there. Here's like I had to explain to somebody the other day. I was like, oh, I said they're making a ton of money, and somebody said, what's a ton? And I said I'm talking like mid '90s ton, and that's a ton of money, because I think there was a time where. Well, I know there was, because I lived through it, where we all made a ton. I mean, just stupid money. It was stupid money. It just didn't make, if you look back on what you were doing, it was like, I mean, I knew guys that were making 200,
mm-hmm.
50 plus bonuses.
You got to listen to my Mike Madrigal interview.
I did. Didn't I listen to that? That's the one, because I emailed you after that, didn't I?
Yeah, actually, that's right.
Yeah.
He talked some numbers, though.
Yeah, I mean,
he was
guys,
very specific about numbers.
There was guys making just stupid money, and you're like, that's not going to last. And it was like anything. It didn't last. And it went. It swung the complete opposite direction. Yeah. And now I think it's kind of. I think it's equal. And it's probably where it should be. Where it should.
Do
have
you
been
think actually? Are you saying you think pay is actually sort of swinging back in the positive direction for?
It has for me. Okay. I mean it.
But isn't that by virtue of you just getting more work put on you?
A lot of it, yes. But that's. But it's kind of my point though, is that you, it's there if you're willing to work for it.
Yeah.
It's definitely there. I there's not one. You know, I am voicing a lot of stations, but I can say this: there's not one that's overpaying me. Not one, not a single one of them am I like, hey, wow, that's too much for what I do. So, you know, because I'm not charging.
Let me ask you this, though. How many have you turned down because the pay wasn't there? Or have you pretty much taken all comers?
You know what? This will be bad.
I know, but I'm going to make you say it.
I've never turned anybody down, and I've done stuff for free because people will call. And if you're cool, now I've never run into a situation where the person wasn't cool. Like if you're called and you're like, do it, we work for the same, I would not do it.
Right.
But you know, I'll get a call like, hey man, I heard you on this thing and I'm in Muskegon and you know, we ain't got no budget. You know, you got PD, that's another thing. I've got PDs that are writing and producing and
they're PDing probably multiple stations on top of writing and producing. Yeah.
So then that's what kind of goes back to where we're talking about with Cowboy Kyle, Big Daddy Kyle, is you know, if a PD can find a guy like him and pay him some money every month, and you know, hey, that's great. And that's what I'm saying. There's plenty of opportunities out there. But I've never said no. I did commercial production. I've said no once when my agent called, and I shouldn't. I'm glad I said no. But it was great money. It was to the Tea Party did an animated web series, and they wanted me to narrate it. And they have, you know, they found me through whatever that website is.
Voices or something?
Not Voice, but, you know, the real one. The one that the Atlas and all those other guys use, the real.
Voice Bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was something through there. And I was like, I can't read. I can't do that. So that was just, and that was just my own political stuff. I didn't want to be associated with
it. I was going to say, there's those kinds of jobs. That's a totally different scenario. I know some people that won't do the medical stuff because they don't necessarily, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, no, you know, and I've said to other people that are like, oh, you can't. And I don't think I'm diluting anything. It's just that, you know, I'm not going to charge a small market a ridiculous amount of money just because that's how it used to be done.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a valid reason to do something. Well, that's how it's always been. If you want me, you don't knock at my door for less than $600 a month. Well, that's stupid, and people don't have to do that anymore.
And, I mean, you know, the other side is make them pay for the quality.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of people that are going to give them their voice for less anyway.
Yep.
So why shouldn't you get that money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean.
Why shouldn't you get that work?
Yeah, and there's only been one time, there's only one station I can think of where I'm getting insane, like, to the point where I'm like, it's insulting that you're even giving it to me. I'll just do it for free.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because somebody that has given me 10 plus stations called and he's like, hey, we're in a bind. You know, we've paid all this money for this morning guy. We got nothing left in the budget. Can you help me out?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
I'm like, absolutely, I'll help you out.
No.
So,
no.
You know, I think that this is the best, you know, policy, I think.
Yeah.
And I still am able to do the outside stuff through, as long as they go through Premiere. You know, that's why I've got the Premiere barter set up. So, I mean, I think that's the big thing is hard work pays off. And I believe that. I'm living it, I think, so far. Knock on stuff.
Nice.
So.
Right on, man. Well, it's been, I've taken up way too much of your time.
No, it's fun. It's crazy that I completely forgot huge events. Like that whole thing in Lexington was traumatic, and I guess that's why I pushed it out. But
well, I'm glad to bring up horrible memories.
Well, no, I'm glad. You know, I'm glad that I've thought about it.
Well, but, you know, that is one of those deals. Everything has to happen for everything, you know. For you to be right here, right now, with this situation, that had to happen.
Yep.
Had to.
It's crazy
how
wise we get as we get older.
Yeah, it is. It's good. Well, right on. Well, thanks for inviting me in here to the...
Yeah, anytime,
I get to see the remodeled Clear Channel Dallas facility, too.
With our fancy wallpaper.
Yeah. Can I take a picture of that wallpaper?
Yep.
I'll use it as the...
The red, the blue, the green, the yellow. It's all different colors. Yeah, now, wild. I will say one thing before you go. In the kitchen, I don't know if you've ever seen this. They've got a big island, and there's like a you know, electrical outlets, and then your whatever, what do you plug in if you're going on the internet?
The Ethernet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a button you push, and these things go...
Really?
And spin around so no water or anything gets down in there.
Nice.
Yeah, that's cool. It's like a Star Trek kind of thing.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's, yeah.
Yeah, you guys got a great facility here.
It is nice.
I was here a few years back before the big redo.
Mm-hmm. This whole building is empty now except us and the Korean consulate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're in the same building with the Korean consulate.
Wow.
So you will Koreans and the diplomatic license plates everywhere, and because this is where they come when they, you know, when they first get here. They
Excellent.
Get there. So, yeah. That's,
wow.
But it's a big building to be so empty.
I was going to say, it was like 10 stories or something, right?
The 14.
14 stories.
Uh-huh.
Why is it so empty?
There was a natural gas company that had all the other floors, and they moved out because it was cheaper just to build their own facility up in Plano.
So I guess the whole, whatever company owns this building isn't.
Yeah, they're probably not thrilled with it.
No.
We love it. Because now, I mean, I used to have to park way down in the basement. Because I stay late. So it's nothing. People, I won't say his name, the guy that works across the hall complains to me once a week. But how he's not getting a promotion. He's not getting the.
Yeah.
Man, 4:45, gone.
Out the door.
Gone.
Yeah.
He's gone. So
it's funny to me that those people can't see, and they'll never see it.
They won't. You know, I believe you. I believe
they're
they
the
won't.
Best thing that happened to radio, and that they're not being rewarded is the crime,
mm-hmm.
not that they're not doing more.
And that's how he's getting even. He's leaving early. He's getting out of here.
Right, and that's going to be getting even when he's canned.
Right.
I mean, how is that getting even?
But I think, you know, it's a weird business, man. It's a weird business, and I don't know. I've been fortunate and lucky, and you know, we all have. We still get to do what we love, and there's a lot to be said for that.
Right on. Well, Cousin Deke, everyone, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, buddy.
The producers.
Okay, thanks again, Cousin Deke, the Honorable His Excellency Reverend Cousin Deke. As we learn, the man of philosophy and religious studies and radio imaging and voiceover excellence. So if you want to hear more from Cousin Deke on the website, ryanontheradio.com, hit the podcast. Just hit the podcast little menu item, and that'll show show notes. That will present you the show notes. I'm learning how to talk. It's literally the fourth time I've tried to record this outro, so I ain't stopping again. I used to be live on the radio for a decade. Yep, talking. Anyway, you can hear more Cousin Deke audio on the show notes page. Again, all linked on the podcast, links on the website, ryanontheradio.com. All right, I'm going to real quickly move through the crap I wanted to mention here. Reach out to me, Twitter, @rdrean, R-D-R-E-A-N. I give updates on the podcast and the blog there. Also, spew my mindless crap. But I promise you, I made a decision years ago. I'm not one of those people that's going to preach or be negative. Or really, if I mention something political, it's as a joke. We'll just say that. I'm not the guy trying to sway your mind on crap that I've just decided a long time ago. I will do that over beer at a bar with my friends and force them to listen to my horrible views. Not the internet. Certainly not on Twitter. So if you want to follow and get updates on this there, you can. Facebook.com/prodpod. That's where I update that. You can get on the email list. Still send that out once a month. Got quite a few people that... Actually, it's kind of fun. I send out my email, and there's always at least 10, maybe 20 different people that'll reply back every time with a cool little note. We get some back and forth. It's fun stuff. So if you'd prefer to be updated via email, you can. Again, it's all found on the website, ryanontheradio.com. Suggestions for guests. I wanted to make this note, and I don't want to make it seem like I'm ungrateful for suggestions. I love when people suggest people, especially if I haven't even heard of the person. And believe me, if I haven't heard of the person, it doesn't mean they don't deserve to be interviewed. There's just, you know, some people I haven't heard of. But if you're making a suggestion, please give me as much info as you can. For example, I'd like to hear the guy who did this thing I heard on a station in 1999 without telling me the station or the guy's name. I really need more. So again, I can do some research and try and find some people for you. But give me as much info as you can. It'll just help me out greatly. And there was one other thing, but I don't want to babble to end this interview. Oh, upcoming. Yes, I have a list of people, as I mentioned. It would have been a good segue had I just segued. I don't have anyone locked just yet, so I'm not giving you a name, but the next episode will most likely be with a very popular voiceover talent. Not that Deke wasn't a popular voiceover talent, but this one is, their career is solely in the voiceover world. And then after that, we'll go back to a radio imaging talent. Try and go back and forth, like I said. I do want to bring up, I've had this asked of me a couple times to go back and talk to some people that I've already spoken with in the past, and I'd love to do that. You know, the one thing I don't want to do is not feature someone new when, you know, they deserve to be featured, just for the sake of kind of getting a big name, you know? But I think there's a few people I talked to so long ago that if they would be willing... It's been certainly a long enough time that the world has completely changed since I started this podcast. So I think it'd be good stuff. So anyway, feel free to tell me the people that you would love to hear again. I'm also coming up. This is all to tell you that I'm coming up with some creative ways to get some people back on the show in just a different manner than just a straight up interview. You know, some roundtable type stuff. I've tried to work it out in the past, but... you know, I think with Skype technology and Google Hangouts, and there's some other ways to get people together now, it's just a lot easier than it was a few years ago. So should be wide open for that. That's all I have to say for now. Again, thanks as always for checking out the podcast. Hopefully it made your day a little better, helps you out in your career, or in some way, shape, or form advances you. Until next time, bye.
This is The Producers. Have a question, comment, or concern? Email Ryan at ryanontheradio.com. The Producers. Thanks for listening.